welcome to the American Pulse. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is a show that seeks to listen, express, and amplify the voice of the American people, no matter where you live in this great nation. We are unabashedly pro-humanity, pro-freedom, and pro-America. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to the American Pulse. We have a really good interview today with one of our state representatives who was kind enough to make time for us. Our conversation runs far and wide, but front and center right now for me, and I believe some of you as well, are two questions. One, what do we do about all the graft and corruption that we're all seeing? Somali daycare centers with no kids in them stealing millions of taxpayer dollars. Well, guess what? We have something to the tune of 400-plus Somali daycare cares right here in Washington State. And how much you want to bet that many of them have few, if any, kids in them. Same playbook as Minnesota. The other question that's burning for me is, can we trust the election? Does anybody, right, center, or left, really trust the elections in this country right now? I don't think so. And President Trump doesn't think so either, which is why he introduced the Save America Act. This is meant to restore faith in our elections and our political process, not only in our nation, but in our great state of Washington. Olympia will fight this all the way, no doubt, and it's a bit ironic, isn't it? With all the corruption in the air, and Democrats are going to fight a bill that simply says only Americans can vote in American elections, and that you need proper photo ID. It seems pretty basic, doesn't it? You would think so. Let me illustrate this a bit further. I cannot vote in French or German or Australian elections. Why? Because I'm not French or German or Australian. I have no citizenship in those countries. I don't pay taxes there, so I have no right to vote there. The same common sense and laws apply right here in America. Just because you're here in our country does not mean you have earned the right to vote. There's a clear process for that. Follow the process if you want to vote. On a kinder, gentler note, with spring in the air, one of my prayers is for the rebirth of our great nation, that good Americans serving in all sorts of capacities will tip the scales in favor of we the people and all of those that love America, no matter their political leanings. And I believe we're seeing this in real time. Before we get to our excellent guest today, I have a couple memes for you. And remember that after our interview, KCGOP Chairwoman Jolie Lansdowne will land the plane in our final segment. The first meme is from Laura Matsui, who says, quote, "Life really comes at you fast. One day I was a leftist because I was into organic food and not taking pharmaceuticals, and now I'm a far-right extremist for being into those exact same things," unquote. Oh, man, I can relate to that, Laura. And the other one is from Etheric Echoes, who says, quote, "Hope is not naive optimism, but the stubborn refusal to grant darkness the final word. It is the quiet rebellion that plants gardens in the midst of ruins," unquote. I love this. Now on to our sponsor and our excellent guest. Enjoy. Today's episode is brought to you by The Renton Printery. From huge outdoor banners to small hard hat decals, The Renton Printery produce top quality, customizable, full color decals, business cards, letterhead, envelopes, signs, table tents, and more. The Renton Printery is a small, independent, veteran-owned business since 1957. For all your printing needs, go to www.rentonprintery.com. And now, on to our episode. My guest today is Brian Burnett. Brian represents We the People in District 12 right here in Washington State. Brian is a husband and father of seven and grandfather to 12. Prior to his work in Olympia, Brian served in law enforcement for 25 years, including 12 years as Chelan County Sheriff. Here is my interview with Brian Burnett. Okay, I am here with Brian Burnett, state rep for Legislative District 12, longtime sheriff in Chelan County, husband and father, Brian Burnett. Brian, welcome to the American Pulse. It is great to have you on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tony. Humbled to be here.
Well, it's great. You know, you and I connected and had coffee, and you were gracious enough to say yes to coming on the show and talking about some of the things that we're going to talk about. But before we really get going, I mentioned that you were sheriff in Chelan County. Maybe just give us a little bit of a background. You serve as the state representative in LD 12. Give us a little bit more of your background, your family, maybe where you grew up, where you live now, and how long were you sheriff of Chelan County, and anything else that you that might be relevant today.
Yeah, you bet. I mean, I grew up here actually in originally it was what they call the Upper Valley, Leavenworth, but I was born and raised in Chelan County. Yep. Graduated from high school in Leavenworth in 1985. And shortly after that, I actually went to work and ended up being my father-in-law's timber logging company, and we worked for a while in Northern California for some contracts that he had. We specialized in highly logging and thinning operations, and it really did an amazing job. My father-in-law was an amazing entrepreneur, ran several other businesses beside that over the years, but that was his main feed. And my wife and I were doing life and had three kids and three young boys and just working our butts off. I just kind of started thinking, it's like, man, this isn't going to be easy. I want to be able to be present for my sons. I want to be able to coach Little League. I want to do stuff like that. And I kind of had the thought of that, well, I'll go into my own business. And then I started doing the math and realized, yeah, then you'll work even longer hours. And I just started praying about it. And before I knew it, the Lord led us back home to Washington, and I started pursuing a career in law enforcement. And then in 1998, I kind of took a back way. I did not have a college education, but was able to get in, went through the reserve program for the Chelan County Sheriff's Office, and then got hired as one of their corrections deputies, and was able to get my qualifications to test as a field deputy. And then 2 years later, I transferred down to the field as a sheriff's deputy for Chelan County, literally signed back in the Cashmere Leavenworth area, right where I grew up. Work in that area, was promoted to corporal, to sergeant, and then got a challenge to run for sheriff in 2010. And I reluctantly took up that challenge, and it was amazing to see what happened. Won by a 76%. We're just needing leadership in our agency. And looking back, Tony, I had no idea what I was doing whatsoever. But I had people before me tell me, if you surround yourself with people that are better than you, focus on them. And I had a county commissioner tell me this, Tony. He says, Brian, if you keep three things, you'll be successful. One, your prioritization is the citizens are number one, your employees are number two, and your office as sheriff and you and your command staff will always be number three. If you keep those in that order, you'll do fine. And I would say that we had a great run. Things weren't easy. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. Very rewarding. I love the people. And then and I'll stop there and I'll back up and tell you a little bit of my family, and then tell you how we got into this crazy thing of being a state representative for the District 12.
Well, yeah. And you know, it's interesting because I attended a Dino. We'll back up and talk about your legislative district stuff. But I was at an event and I heard Dino Rossi. For those who don't know, he was the he ran for governor, very prominent Republican and conservative, lost by 6 votes or whatever it was. I might not have it right. It was like 16 on a recount or something like that. It was interesting. But he's a really dynamic speaker. And I was there at a Republican event on the East Side, you know, and he was talking. He said, you know, it is very possible to flip Washington. And for people in King County, you know, it's just like, what, you know? And you know, he kind of reminded everybody that things pendulum back and forth in the United States on a state-to-state level. And I think when you live in a really blue area like King County, now you're not in our county, it can be really difficult to picture it pendulum back to Republican. He was said, you know, back, you know, 20 years ago, the King County was red and all the Democrats lived on the eastern side of the state. He goes, so things change and you just need good people running on principles to change them. And when you and I had coffee, you had mentioned something, you know, I was talking about how to flip the state, at least make it purple and not so blue. And you were saying, well, we have a whole lot of Christians, over a million that aren't registered or aren't voting. Is that right?
I think the belief is out there that we can pull out either conservative Christian voters that one either aren't currently registered or getting the ones that are registered and haven't been voting to install that hope and encouragement back in them to get them out, get to the ballot box. Yeah. And cast their vote. Hopefully that will be favorable of the red tide. Right. And let's split this. Yeah. Let's split the blue.
Yeah.
Sea.
Yeah.
Back, other than instead of parting the red sea, we want to part the blue sea.
Yep.
we believe that can happen. And here's the reason being is because it's not all about King County, even though they share the majority of the population. But we believe we can turn that. And remember, this is state elections. This is a little different when you're talking about legislative districts, because they hold so many districts in that super blue area there, Puget Sound and in Seattle. But in a statewide election, that's where it's going to, because every vote, right? Every vote in those districts are going to count towards that state office. And I think that's where we stand a chance of really making this pendulum swing and get that momentum going.
I love it. You know, you served already, and thank you for doing so with courage and integrity. What had you raise your hand to run again? Are you seeing sparks of, you know, this is moving in the right direction? Are you sensing the pendulum moving a bit? You know, because sometimes over here, I love what you said about it's not all about King County. I agree. It's not about all about King County. We have a big state with lots of different viewpoints. But what had you raise your hand and say, yeah, I'm gonna make another run at this? What are you seeing that's got you maybe optimistic?
Well, okay, it'll take us a couple minutes to get there, but so on my fourth election as sheriff, I lost that election. Mm-hmm. I actually was up by 12 points during the primary. My supposedly conservative opponent, which I don't think of him too much as a conservative, but, you know, but he appealed to the progressive, and they went out, and he was the lesser of two evils. They didn't like me. I opposed Inslee and wrote support letters for a lawsuit during COVID, because the emergency had come and gone and didn't pan out to be what they, you know, sold it to be. Mm-hmm. And we're saying, hey, we need to, you know, slack off on these emergency declarations and the powers and release the people to be able to go back to work and go back to their churches and do the things that were designed to do in fellowship. And so that caught my attention a little bit of powers more on the liberal side of people voting. Mm-hmm. And then they canvassed, had a lot of door knocking, I wouldn't believe what happened. And anyway, lost the election. I immediately got a job offer in the private security world and was immediately making more money than I did as elected sheriff, with just a ton of time on my hand because I was working remotely part-time. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, Tony, I was going through a recovery. I loved my agency. I've only worked for Chelan County as a law enforcement agency, right? Mm-hmm. 25 years. Didn't feel that it was right for me to stay. I knew that I needed to step away and to trust in God and my faith, and that's who I am, and that he would provide, and he did. Literally 2 days after the announcement that the vote count was final, I had someone call me, and it was really an answer, almost a prophetic word. It was just a podcast in itself, but just phenomenal and how that worked out, and has really set me up to be able to do what I do today and still provide very well for my family. But, you know, married to my wife, April, of 39 years, we have 7 kids. We have 6 biological children. We have 1 adopted daughter that's a survivor from sex trafficking. So it makes me very passionate about that. All of our children are adults now, and we have 13 grandkids and a couple more on the way. And when I lost that election, we started traveling a little bit and looking around and visited our friends in South Dakota. We were really, really close to buying some property there that had a lodge and Airbnbs. Yep. And make it a retreat center to minister to law enforcement marriages and the fight and the hardships that they go through, whether they're fighting post-traumatic stress or just the nuances of those first responders and trying to get through life. And then literally out of nowhere, you know, our district was redrawn and finalized by a judge. And it drew our state senator out of it, took all of the city population of East Wenatchee out, and took it farther over from the east side of the Cascade Mountains to the west side, including parts of King County and parts of Snohomish County. So our district goes all the way over to Monroe and then across Duval, Carnation, Snoqualmie Ridge, and to North Bend. And just some real different demographics. So I get a call one day. I didn't even know that the redistricting had happened. I'm literally just minding my own business and moving along. And someone said, hey, this has happened. I don't know if you're aware, but Senator has just announced he's not going to run. Keith Gaynor in this legislative House position 1, which is the one I hold, has announced that he's going to run for that Senate position. And we want to know if you would consider running. And it caught me out of left field. Got done with that conversation, and a half an hour later, I received another phone call asking me the exact same thing. I'm pretty sure it was a setup, to be honest with you. Yeah. And so my wife, we were actually in the car driving towards Snoqualmie Pass, and she looked at me, and she didn't say a word, Tony, but I saw the look on her face, like, don't you even think about it. I could not but think about it. I wasn't, it's not that I was interested in, but it was heavy on my mind. Mm-hmm. And a couple of days later, I went to her and said, hey, we really need to talk about this. And so we knew it was right. We knew we needed to pray about it. We needed to seek wise. And so we did. And on day seven, we were sitting in the living room of just phenomenal couple and my icons, Clyde and Ruth Ballard, who held my position in the legislation in the late 90s and early 2000s. He held that position for 20 years. He was a Speaker of the House for around 16 years. Phenomenal man. We attend the same church. They're married 70 years and in their 90s now. And I asked Clyde the question. I said, Clyde, I said, I need to know. I'm not a person that's looking for name recognition. I don't need to see my name on signs. That's not what I'm looking for. If I do something, I want to know that I can make a difference. And I need to know, regardless of who has the majority in the House, who has control as a governor, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, can I make a difference? And without hesitation, Clyde answered just resoundingly yes, and here's why. And we sat there for the next hour and a half and listened to their story. Mm-hmm. And we were, I think we were challenged, we were compelled. And when we went home that night, we believed we were called. And even though we were not necessarily thrilled about it, we had a peace in our spirit that God was calling us to take a step of faith and do it. And I thought literally that I had about 10 more days until filing week. And then all of a sudden I woke up on a Thursday and realized, oh my gosh, we'll have to file on Monday and I don't have anything set up. And so I called my daughter and said, hey, get a domain. I need emails, addresses, and these type of things. And I went and opened a bank account and put enough money in that account to do the filing period and open up a post office box. And we announced the next day, I wrote a press release and then filed 3 days later. You know, the rest is history, but put 10,000 miles on that campaign, even though it didn't start till the first week of May, and covered this vast district. Here's what happened during that time, Tony. It was phenomenal, is that when the 12th district felt threatened by liberalism coming in, we do believe that the Democrat Party thought that they could finally, by gerrymandering, take over the 12th and get into an area and change that. And when I met the most incredible people along the way that were willing to come out of nowhere after meeting us to help support us, to hope to have conservative representation in Olympia, we were so humbled, but we met the most amazing people. And then one day we were driving home through Monroe and I realized, you know, this was after the election, but it's like, this is home now, right? This district is bigger and we shouldn't take this as a negative thing. We take this as a positive thing and we're not going to lose ground. We're going to take ground because we are going to get out and we're going to represent the people and we're going to hear them out regardless of political views, ideologies. My door is always open. Matter of fact, my car door is always open and I'll drive and I'll meet you to hear you out.
I can attest to that because we asked to meet you and you met us. So,
but I mean, I just met with a guy that runs Snow Valley Pride.
Yeah.
And because we were at an event and we did not know he was the main speaker, but we were trying to get out and cover. This literally was last night and over in Snoqualmie Ridge. And we were sitting there going, oh my gosh, this goes against all of our faith beliefs and our religious ideologies. But I just sat there and I listened to them. And when they were done, I was trying to have an open mind. And I afterwards approached him and I said, hey, here's my card, here's my cell number. Can we have a talk? Because here's the deal. I said, you know, the one thing that on the conservative mindset that really scares people is this whole drag queen thing. And I said, and to be honest with you, I just said, and people are fearful that their children are going to be molested. So how can you reassure me that your events cover that? And I mm-hmm. said, no, those are the type of things. I said, so I'm wanting to know, even though we might not agree philosophically or on a faith-based worldview, can we at least sit down and can I hear what you have to say? Because I think that's important for me to have that where your background, and I could tell he's like, wow,
yeah,
faith-based conservative willing to sit down and at least dialogue with me. And that's not easy. That's very uncomfortable sometimes. But here's the deal. These are things that exist in our world. These are things that exist in Washington State. And we represent all of these people. And I told him before I left there, I said, we can talk later. I said, but, you know, as a sheriff, I love being a sheriff. I never once answered a 911 call and showed up and said, hey, can I see your ID and your voter registration card? You know, can I have your political background? And how do you identify sexually? No, that's not, I'm there to protect all people, citizens, visitors, recreational people, all alike. And I said, and that's what I want to be able to do as a legislator. Now,
that's great. Right. Brian, I'm busting in. I'm going to redirect a little bit here. We got to get to the other questions. So, but one thing you said at the coffee that is the final thought in there, you said, I may not agree with your perspectives and opinions, but they're important to me. And I thought, what a great way to approach things. That comes right from your sheriff's training, by the way, I'm sure. But I don't hear enough of that, because what we tend to do is we tune out the other silos. You know, if we're Republicans, we don't want to hear what the Democrats have to say. And even in the Republican Party, we're siloed of MAGA, non-MAGA. And so there can be a sense of like, I don't, you know, your perspectives aren't important to me, is how things come across a lot. And that you were so much about, I want to hear your opinions, no matter where you're at in the political spectrum, they're important to me. I think it speaks to your wisdom and your ability to hold multiple perspectives, which is super important when you're in politics and you've got this, you're trying to build bridges and all that. You know, I wanted to ask you one thing, talking to a ton of different people, Brian, people don't have faith in the elections. They don't. And that is not just the conservatives, not just the conspiracy minded MAGA people. That is true for centrists. I talk to Democrats and they're like, I think it's all corrupt. I think they're worried about Republicans stealing the election. Nobody trusts the mail-in, the software, Dominion, all the different shenanigans that have gone on. And of course, as a conservative, I hear about the Democrats, but I can tell you from talking to liberals, they're fearful of it too. So I would think something like the Save America Act, where it's we take the whole day and vote, and you've got to have ID, you've got to be a citizen. I would think that would have a mass appeal to everybody, right? Because what we really want as Americans, we want to be able to count on our elections. And people right now, I'm telling you, they have no faith that what the numbers are won't be changed by a bunch of mail-in ballots in the 11th hour, or the software won't be switched. I mean, we've just seen so many things over the last few years. What is your take? How important is that bill? And is Washington going to fight it? Are we going to have elections that we can count on? That's the real question.
Yeah, I think for me, it's what's truth, right, Tony? And this goes back to my law enforcement background. If I was to sit down with some kids that were accused of some basic, you know, graffiti vandalism or doing some shoplifting, I worked in the school districts a little bit as a school resource officer one time. And I just said, hey, guys, I'm not here to accuse you. I'm just here as a truth seeker. Really, I just need to find the facts. Help me with the facts and we'll let it all sort its way out. But that's 100% is... If we get opposition to that, you can only wonder why in the world would you not want to have an integral voting system that you know without a doubt that it's 99.9% pure. And when I say 99.9%, we know we can't ever reach the 100% dream number, right? But if we can get close, then we know we can affect an election that is fair and true. Yeah. And the choice of the people. And I've always said that, hey, if I'm not the choice, I just want to know that I'm the real choice, right? What is the choice and how did they vote? And if people decide to go a different direction, then that's on them. And I represent who I am. I give them the real information and let them decide that. And that's kind of how it's how we talked about this, is sitting down with people, is I just want to know the truth, because in love and war, you better know the facts, right? You need to, and I hate to say it this way, but then because we are when we go to the House floor and we're working in committees and we have the majority party and the minority party, it is a huge thing. And we are oppositionally, diametrically opposed at times, mm-hmm. and then other times we're working together. But you have to know your enemies well, and yeah. you have to know what makes them tick. But I always looked at it this way: if I came in as the sheriff and I said, "Hey, I'm going to do they call it a LEMAP study. It's a loan executive management assistant program," and you have other executive managers come in and they evaluate your civil operations and your records and your investigations and all of that stuff, and then they give you this evaluation. And it was for a couple of reasons. One, I already knew what I knew. And two, I wanted to know what I didn't know. And so if I'm going to sit down with the constituents, I need to know everything to be able to make wise policy decisions. And one of the things, Tony, for I think that to be the best policymaker is you have to work with all stakeholders and you have to have all the angles of what they're thinking and why. Because what happens is we see rational or irrational decisions made very hastily. And they put together very policy that hasn't been thought through. And then all of a sudden they have to amend it, they have to change it. And then they're coming back 2 or 3 years after policy has been put into effect. And they have to go back and do this. This is 100% for the America's Voters Act or whatever, Save America Act. It has to be integral. There's no alternative solution here. And anybody opposed to that would be like, raise the red flag. There's a problem here if you're opposed to that.
Well, and they're doing the same thing with DOGE. I see people in Seattle, not where you're at, but where I'm at, you know, the signs, they change the signs every few months. You know, it was Antifa and BLM back in the day. And then it was Ukraine and then Gaza and Palestine. They're practically waving, you know, they don't like DOGE. They don't want to be audited, right? It's like they're pro-corruption. In their thinking, like they're like, because Trump started this kind of, let's look under the hood of all this graft and corruption. Let's see how much taxpayer dollars are being siphoned into these NGOs and not-for-profits. Oh, look, the Somali daycares, there's no kids. There's just tens of millions of dollars being sucked into this with some elites pulling, you know, their share out. And I think in Washington State, I think it would be the same thing. I think we have a lot of, and I'm not picking on the Somalis. I think the Somali daycares are a, you know, it's a tip of the iceberg. It just happens to be the one they looked at in Minnesota. And we happen to have a lot of them here. How many kids are in those? Probably not many. But this kind of stealing of the taxpayers' dollars, it's systemic. It's not just national. It's state to state. It's local. How do we get a handle on this? And are politicians in Olympia, are they going to fight? Are they going to be like, we don't want to waste any resources looking under the hood? It's like, well, wait a minute. You know, look at what Minnesota found. Like, how do we do it? And it's not just Democrats. I pick on the Democrats a lot because I'm a conservative. But there's plenty of Republicans on the list as well. Let's be honest. The cookie jar is. It goes around, and I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just saying when people are benefiting from the corruption and they're the ones deciding whether or not to investigate the corruption, there is a conflict of interest. And how do you navigate that? How do you navigate that without everybody going, hey, he wants to kill the gravy train? You know, I know that gives you a lot. I don't want to, you know, put you on the spot. But I mean, I think a lot of people in Washington are thinking about this because when the Somali daycares thing hit in Minnesota and people said, oh, we've got like 400 of them here. It's like, OK, well, it's coming here. I don't know what the politicians are talking about, but it's probably going to happen here as well. I know Glenn Morgan's leading up the DOGE in some of the ways. And what are your thoughts on that? And what could we maybe expect in the next year?
As long as man has roamed the earth, there has been negligence and fraud mm-hmm. and taking something that does not belong to them, trying to take the easy road out, taking advantage of people, vulnerable people. It's wrong. And I was blown away if our attorney general, when he made the statement that we there's nothing to look into. Wow. And it's like, man, you know, this is the way complaints work in law enforcement, whether it's a call that you're investigating on someone out in the public, or, you know, we'll get complaints from the public towards your own staff, and you have to find out the credibility to it. That's the first step. You respond, and if it's on a staff, and what we call an internal investigation, you just do the face value of it to find out, is there credibility here? Mm-hmm. And then do we need to open up an investigation, right? It's just a preliminary investigation to see, does anything exist here that is credible to the accusations? And once that is, then you have to start that, and you have to go down that train to find out that, can you substantiate it, you know, or, you know, or is it not credible? And then you just go through that. But to just blanket form say there's nothing to see here, what do they have, an all-knowing looking glass? I mean, come on. Right? That's what that attorney general's office is supposed to be. At the same time, I heard bills and committees that gave them increasing powers to the attorney general's office to do a warrant service and investigations on businesses for fraud. And then you're saying you won't even look into this, which could be millions, if not billions of dollars. Yeah. And the investment upfront would be pennies to the dollars on the money that you could save for the taxpayers, if not even take them out of what our current debt situation is in the state. And I think that's irresponsible to say that we wouldn't take that route to at least do the surface investigation to find out the credibility. It's wrong. We should be doing that. Then we know, right? I mean, those positions should be non-biased, regardless of their partisan. You should be there to serve the people with everything you have integrally.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I saw, I might have saw it on your website, actually, where Washington State ranks last or near the bottom in the nation of police officers per capita. I don't know if that's one we want to be at the bottom of. I think we need to have, you know, there's a lot of talk of safety in the cities and all this. And I know it's a complicated issue, Brian. There's a lot of mental illness, a lot of drug abuse. And so you mix that in, the crime rates go up, right? I've got a lot of people, I live in North Seattle, and you can see the ravages of fentanyl and drug use right down the street as I go down to Home Depot to pick up something. Like, you can just see it. And I think the overall impact for Seattleites, I'll speak for, is there's just kind of a sense of unease. Like, you know, we've always had drugs. We've always had some crime in our city. You know, we're a big city. We're a port city. But it's never been to this level. It's never been where, you know, I'm kind of, my head's on a swivel when I come home at night and I look around to make sure there's not somebody in the bushes, you know, ready to clock me on the head, you know, and it's a real fear. And I know I'm not the only one. I can imagine how women feel, getting out of their cars and wondering if there's somebody that's lurking or waiting for them by their front door. How do we restore safety in our cities? How do we put more police back on the force and get away from this? I think the pendulum's starting to turn. I don't hear as much against the blue as I did, say, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, but we're still near the bottom, right?
Yeah, we are, Tony. We are 51st in the nation. We've been dead last for a long time. And, you know, they passed that bill here back in 2025 to put $100 million back into law enforcement. It wasn't even going to move the needle. That wouldn't even impact that. I think it was going to take, if you could put $2 or $3 billion into law enforcement in Washington State, and it might move us up out of last place by maybe a couple positions. And in defense of that, I think it's fair to say, you know, Washington State has paid well. They have interest arbitration, they have, you know, buying arbitration. And so there's a lot of things that the agencies do to, you know, collective bargaining agreements to do well in their contracts and for health benefits and other supporting things.
Are you saying they opt to be a leaner force that has better salary and benefits, basically?
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, if you go back to the Midwest or the South, I mean, they barely make minimum wage in some places there. Okay. And that's not the case here in Washington State. For law enforcement in general, it's very well compensated for the industry nationwide. Yeah. We also have very, very good model policy. We have some great things in place through WASPIC, which is the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs. Mm-hmm. And And we have great hiring standards. And so for all in all, we have one of the most integral states in Washington State. And then in starting in about 2019, legislation started stripping and tearing it apart and attacking it in their de-escalation mode. And they called it a lot of different things. And then what happened was it backfired on them. And a few short years later, they realized, oh my gosh, I got to get reelected. So now all of a sudden, I'm in favor of law enforcement, public safety. So I need to go out and get a couple wins. And show, and it was like, well, wait a second, you know, just two sessions ago, you were voting the hell out of it and didn't care a bit about what this did. And so the impacts of that, it's not about what were the impacts society wise, how did that impact me politically? And yeah. So, you know, it's that, and that's kind of sad to see that. So there's a lot of things we need to do to change this. And I toured a juvenile justice facility here, and this is where some of our young offenders go for horrific crimes, a lot of homicides and drive-by shootings and that type of stuff. And they were juvenile offenders when those crimes were committed, and then they were convicted and put into incarceration. And so they're going to serve their years until they're 25, because there's the movement of, you know, the brains weren't fully developed until they're 25. So therefore, we need to go back and look at sentencing, resentencing programs, and to see if they need to be let out because they weren't able to make a decision on their own. A lot of gang activity, that's not going to be solved in a juvenile justice program. That needs to be solved society on the outside. Government, not the end all answer in serving and fixing everything. We need programs. So, I mean, part of that is faith-based driven. There's just a lot of things that have attacked our society. The implementation of a structured, of a real structured family, the loss of fatherhood in the homes. This was done years ago, I think, through Focus on the Family, and somebody said, hey, I own this card company. I will offer up to give free cards for Mother's Day for the men in the prisons, right? And overwhelming response. I mean, they couldn't hardly provide enough cards for these prisons and wherever this was. And then they did the same thing for Father's Day and hardly got a request at all. And it's because we have a lack of leadership and fatherhood in our homes, and we need to bring back responsibility and what that looks like to be a real man, to be a godly man. I believe in that. Even just the principles alone, right? It was like, you know, treat others as you would have them treat you, you know, and that type of thing. It's just the golden rule. It's how we do it. But there's also needs to be some accountability. And I believe in forgiveness and grace and mercy and rehabilitation. 100%. I'm going mountain biking tomorrow morning. Thank God, the first ride of the year with a buddy of mine that is a 9-time convicted felon. And he was restored through faith. And he has an amazing story. And he's in an amazing position. He's one of that few guys that I trust more with my own family or my own personal walk than this guy. But I know I can count on him, but he's got the story. He walked one hell of a road to get there.
Yeah, right? He did. Yeah.
So now he can talk that road with those people that are in there. So I know we have a lot to do and a lot of things we can focus on. And I think that's where I go back to say, this is why I need to talk to the other side, because extreme right side's not working. Extreme left side's not working. Let's really stop. Whoa, put on the brakes, stop. Let's regather, let's regroup. We need accountability, but we also need to have justice, programs that bring restoration and healing. You talked a little bit about hope in the voting system, and it's the same thing in our prisons. Whether it's juvenile or adult DOC, Department of Corrections, when there's lost hope and there's no hope, everything's out the window. And so what we need to do is we need to bring back things that people can shoot for and aim for, that can say, hey, if I can get to here, I can get this, and it gives me something better. Whether that, you know, but unfortunately, sometimes there's consequences that comes with certain crimes that says you're never going to get out. And there are people that are flat out evil and have made those choices. But sure. I think we need to back and say, how can we find solutions that is going to better make a better solution for less incarceration of our youth, but also that makes us safer, what I call the quality of life
Beautiful. Brian, I love everything you're saying. Thank you so much for coming on American Pulse and sharing your insight, your wisdom, your experience. And thank you for serving We the People so well. We appreciate your courage and your integrity and your alignment with God, all of our principles that we share with you. Where can people support you, find you, get behind your campaign for re-election in November? How do we get involved and how do we support you?
Yeah, thank you, Tony. I really appreciate that. You know, my personal campaign site is burnettforstaterepresentative.com. And you'll see the things that I stand for. I see some of my, you know, professional history and some things about my family. You can also go on and see what's happened over the last couple years in from the House Republican Caucus and my work there as a state representative. And that's at Washington State. But if you can Google it, they'll both come up. Go on and check them out. A lot of our committee works, what we're doing there, some of the different task force that I'm assigned to, human trafficking, in the public, different public safety issues and stuff. And I was just telling you offline that I just got appointed on a national level as one of two state legislators from Washington State to represent the National Conference for State Legislators and their law on public safety. So pretty excited about that.
Absolutely.
We need to bring some good common sense back to Washington State. We need to be, you know, they've always said that the best policy is made when the majority and the minority are really close in numbers, because people have to come to the table and actually discuss it. And that, and we're trying to get that to happen, even though we're way down the minority, to say, hey, we've got some good ideas. Let's work together and let's make this happen for the better of Washington State.
Love it, Brian. Thank you so much for taking time today. Appreciate it. God bless and good luck with it all. And let's keep in touch. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Tony.
That was such a great interview, wasn't it, with our Representative Burnett? It just really encourages us, I think, to hear from those on the battlefield for us in Olympia. You know, the culture here at KCGOP is one that values honor, and we're thankful to have the opportunity to lift up Representative Burnett and who he is, and share more of who he is with you as he consistently lifts up our voices in Olympia. I wanted to highlight this concept that I kept hearing throughout the interview of emerging truth. You know, we're seeing this in an increasing way, I think, you know, just really everywhere. We're seeing it with DOGE, for example, you know, the truth coming forth in our financial ledgers in government, thank goodness. We're seeing, you know, the Save America Act, that's another large example. Voters needing to show their ID, you know, that's the truth of who they are. Or no men in women's sports, you know, the truth of biology. There's just a greater grace for seeking truth and finding it in these days. And I'm noticing it in a real way as many are drawn to the Republican Party here and kind of kicking the tires and checking us out as they seek truth and further understanding in many areas. And, you know, I think in King County, we're truth seekers, aren't we? Just by nature, conservatives are truth seekers. I just really thank you guys for listening today. I think this was a great interview. And I really am observing that there's just a greater invitation in this season to shine brighter, to really come further out of hiding for some of us. You know, many of us hide in, as conservatives in this region, I think we hide some of who we are, you know, whether it's with our morning coffee visit with the barista, or, you know, with our coworkers, or different relationships. And I think it does a disservice to many to not get to experience the fullness of who each of us are, and in truth, you know, speaking the truth of who we are in love, of course. But I just really am observing there's this pattern of emerging truth in these days, and there's this invitation to step more into the fullness of who we are and shine a little bit brighter. So I just thank you guys again for joining us, for being, you know, the ones in the arena and working to really just, we're part of the force that is rebuilding and restoring our Washington State together. So if you'd like to connect more on any of these items, a great place to always go is kcgop.org. And we look forward to connecting again in the future. Let's do this, King County.